Hey folks, my name is Diane T. Grateful to be recovering from compulsive overeating and to see all these beautiful faces, many of which I recognize and adore. What it was like, what happened, and where I'm now, how I'm working my program. I love that I have 20 minutes. I love it. So I can go in a little bit of detail of some of these amazing experiences that I've had. If at any point I'm talking too fast, excited New Yorker as I can be, or you can't hear me well, somebody just let me know. When I came in a program 7 years ago this September, I came in with this self-pitying badge of honor across my chest, like a Girl Scout badge, you know, that big sash with the badges on it. That if you had the trauma that happened to you, that happened to me when I was a kid, of course you'd be a compulsive overeater. Of course you'd have problems. It was not long after I came into program and heard the voices of my fellows that I realized, even if I had the fairy tale childhood, it's what it is. This is what would have been. I would have been a compulsive overeater. By the big guy's design upstairs, and who am I to question it? So when I was a kid, yes, I had horrible things happen to me. I was repeatedly sexually abused in my sleep by a family member. My dad was violent. I'm sorry, I forgot to turn on my timer. Okay, my dad was violent, and my mom was a paranoid schizophrenic. And my little fragile mind just started cracking these fissures, and I needed something to help me cope. If it wasn't food, it would have been something else. And again, if I had the perfect childhood, I probably would have just had problems with life in general, and in combination with the allergy of the body. So my eating disorder started young. I remembered being around 7 years old or so and thinking, why is it when I eat yayas, yayas Greek for grandma, yayas, kourabiedes, and all these other Greek pastries, that I feel drugged, I feel tired, I feel out of it. I didn't know. And why was it that after I ate a meal and I was full, and my parents would say, okay, dessert time. And even though I was full, I felt like a cow, like all of a sudden I had a second stomach and I could eat tons of sweet food. It just baffled me. I also knew that as a result of the childhood trauma, especially the sexual experiences, I realized my body wasn't a safe place, and I turned on my body and I thought, it's not safe, it's gross, it's terrible. And I remember being 10 or 11 years old. And looking back at pictures, I had the perfect little body of a little girl, but I thought my body was so gross that even though it was June and kids were wearing shorts to school, I wanted to wear shorts so badly, but I thought my legs were so grotesque that I wore a pair of navy pantyhose under my shorts, hoping people wouldn't see at least how half bad my legs were. When I was 13 and I started entering puberty, then I thought, oh my goodness, I'm getting really fat. What do I do? So I would just stop eating for days at a time. I remember one time in junior high, my social studies teacher said to me, what's going on, kid? You're looking skinny. Aren't they feeding you? And I said, well, you know, Mr. Hill, I tried on my bathing suit and I just didn't like how I looked. And he didn't know what to say. He just walked away. By the time I was 15, I discovered bulimia. Whoa, was I on a roll for a few months? This is great. Eat anything I want. vomit, it's done. And then I went through what we called some 40 years ago, bulimorexia, back and forth between anorectic or restricting states, not eating maybe for days on end, to eating, vomiting, eating, vomiting. And yeah, since our disease is permanent, progressive, and fatal, it just got worse. Instead of maybe vomiting once every few days, I then was vomiting several times a day. And it was getting tougher to vomit because I was screwing up my esophagus. And when I couldn't vomit, I would purge, at least try to purge the calories by exercise. I remember one time I ate half a bagel. I made myself like a drill sergeant, get out there and run. And I ran 13 miles. I mean, torture, the torture up here, the torture. Nobody would ever have looked at me and said, this woman has, or this girl has an eating disorder. I look perfectly healthy. You know, I was an athlete. Disease progressed. I tried everything to stop wanting to eat, and I'm not talking about broccoli, to stop wanting to eat, especially sweets, refined carbs, in mass, and then vomiting them. And one of the lowest experiences I can remember was when I was about 21 years old, and I was in my grandmother's basement. It was about 3 in the morning, and I had just eaten probably a pound, pound and a half of cold plain pasta, just because that's what the madman in my head said. Anything, just eat anything and eat a lot of it. And I got tired of fighting with it, so I relented. I ate. And then I didn't want my family to hear me vomiting in the bathroom. So I took a bucket and a wooden spatula and went down in the basement and was vomiting over the bucket, crying, feeling like the most grotesque person, so undeserving of life to be on the planet, that nobody ever could be as insane as I was and doing the kind of things that I was doing right then and there. Crying, begging God for the food to come up so I wouldn't get fat, so I wouldn't be having that screaming demon in my head beating me up about how bad I was. And at the same time, to not choke on that spatula and have my family find me dead in a pool of vomit. I did the whack-a-mole where, yeah, crazy thrill-seeking adventure would temporarily take my mind, my attention off the food. Whether it was getting on a motorcycle and riding, you know, at top speeds without a helmet. Back then, I don't know if any of you remember a Walkman. I was using a Walkman, or climbing, rock climbing in Sierra, Spain, without ropes, pulleys, and cords. A lot of stupid stuff. Transferring my addiction to whatever boyfriend I was with at the time. It was great, made me stop wanting to eat, but then that was my addiction. That was my addiction. And herbal appetite suppressants. It was often so hard just to get through the day without this gremlin in my head constantly screaming at me to eat or telling me how bad I was. And how it was an F up, because even though I could do all these amazing things in my life, doctoral studies, you know, travel the planet, write books, I mean, that I was an F up because I couldn't do something as simple as control my food. I had taught college for many years, especially writing courses. I also in the fitness industry for 40 years. And I thought, I am the biggest fraud on the planet. You know, people probably think I'm this, you know, this great athlete, and I'm, you know, this paragon of health and fitness, but they have no idea what an F up I really am. And then sometime around 2007, I remember hearing that lap band was approved by the FDA. And I thought, okay, I'm not obese, but maybe I can somehow get that and it'll turn this off. It wasn't like I was 80 pounds and my body was screaming for me to eat like protein and vegetables. That wasn't it. It was screaming to me to eat garbage food. Even though I'd already consumed all the nutrition that I had needed. So, of course, I couldn't get the lap band done here in the US. I found a reputable surgeon in Monterrey, Mexico, and I went there. I had the lap band surgery. And I've got to tell you, for several months, I was living the dream. I was living the dream. I said, oh my goodness, this is what it is to be a normal person. I can eat a bite of something sweet or half a sandwich or a salad and this, and it's like that's enough, it's okay. I was like, somebody pinched me, I went to heaven. But then, like my twin brother says, you can paint a leopard white, but the spots always come through. My disease said, here I am, I'm not going anywhere. So slowly but surely, the cravings, those horrific cravings came back. And I eventually had what's called a slip band, where I don't know if any of you know about the lap band. Your stomach's like this. The lap band is a silicone ring that goes around it, and it tricks your stomach into thinking it's smaller, and you can adjust, the size of it. So the band slipped, so the stomach prolapsed over the band. So I had to get a revision surgery at NYU, surgery two. Then, I had like 2 months later, as it was healing, maybe less than that, I was in the shower and I saw this hematoma, this little blood-filled sac where the surgery was. And I lanced it with a sterile blade and then water, blood, and a steri strip, like a gauze strip, popped out. And I said, okay, somebody screwed up doing surgery. Hopefully that's the end of it. It wasn't. I had what's called a veno-concentrating fistula. The surgeon tried to fix it, he couldn't. I had a staph infection. I had to get another surgery, three, fix that and clean out the infection. And then again, the disease is permanent, progressive, and fatal. I felt like I didn't have the band anymore. I felt like I had no support to help me stop wanting to eat. So I called the doctor in Mexico and I said, you got to help me. I'm scared to death. All I want to do is eat. I'd rather throw myself off a building. He said, come down. He did some films and said, you're done with the lap band. Your esophagus is damaged. Your stomach's damaged. Take it out. He said, if you want, I'll do a gastric bypass. And if any of you know about that, that's the sleeve where they take out a chunk of your stomach and then rewire part of your intestine. I said, that sounds a little extreme. How about just doing the sleeve? So surgery four now, right? So he takes out the lap band, does the sleeve, and I recoup in the hotel after the being in the hospital several days. I recoup in the hotel, drink a lot of water, walk around, get my butt on the plane from Mexico, go back to New York, and in no time at all, this eating disorder is crazier than ever, crazier than ever. I mean, I felt like somebody possessed. And I called the doctor. I said, I want to come down. I want you to do the other half of the surgery. I don't know what to do. I'm out of my mind. And he said, you've got to wait 3 months until you heal. I said, I can't. I can't. So, of course, I tried other bunch of other, stopgap measures that didn't work. And by 2 months instead of three, he finally let me come down. We're talking surgery five now. Why am I counting these? To tell you the craziness of the disease in my life. Okay. And we're not done with five surgeries. So I went down there and June 2018, about a week ago, 7 years ago, he did the other half of the surgery, relooped part of my intestines, So then I did my thing. I'm in the hospital for a few days. Then I'm in the hotel. I'm drinking my water. I'm walking. And then I'm feeling really thirsty. Like, what the hell's wrong with me? I drank 7 liters of water, felt like I'd only drank two sips. I'm like, okay, this is really strange. And then I started getting acute pain, GI pain, unlike anything I've ever felt in my life. And I tried to get hold of the surgeon and I couldn't. And the pain escalated so much. I mean, and I think I'm a tough cookie. I've broken limbs. I've tramped around the Amazon jungle with a 100-pound backpack on. I think I'm tough. That kind of pain, I thought I would have been, my psyche would have just blocked it out by just knocking me unconscious. Didn't happen. So what I did was, because I couldn't get the surgeon, I took the strap from the carry-on luggage and I tried to asphyxiate myself after writing my family a goodbye note. And I took that as a page out of a famous chef who did that to himself 7 years ago, whom I'm sure a lot of you knew, died by asphyxiation. And my ode to him. Anyway, so I wasn't strong enough to asphyxiate myself, and my God was too strong to let it happen. So the surgeon somehow got in touch with the hotel. They got me. Oh, I'm yucking it up, and I didn't even get to the how I'm living today. I'm caught up in all the drama. Okay, so they get me wrapped up, get me in a car. I get to the hospital. The surgeon tells me I'm septic, and that he can't do surgery on me because he's afraid I'm going to die. So he gets me in some. I hate I got to fast forward on this, but I only have a couple minutes. So he, pumps me up with morphine and antibiotics, and after several days, I get back to New York. Amazing miracles and how that happened. Surgeon in New York did surgery on me 2 days in a row, seven surgeries now, 2 days in a row to save my life. Cut me open like a Thanksgiving turkey from just under my sternum down to my groin. Took out 2 liters of pus, flushed out my intestines, cut out dead tissue. And even today says, I can't believe you lived. You're my miracle patient. So what did Diane T do? She, after 2 months, when she got home from the hospital, out, off life support and out of the nursing home, 2 weeks later, I wanted to eat again. Major, major cravings. The boogeyman taking
Gentle
me over.
reminder, 2 minutes left.
Thank you. So what did I do? I fell to my knees, screaming and crying, God help me or take me. Help me or take me. And he somehow guided me to the rooms of OA, back to the rooms of OA. 12 years before, I'd been in two meetings. And when I heard the part about step four and step five, making, listing my amends, sharing them, and then step nine, making amends, sharing my wrongs and then making amends. I got scared to death, said, no way, no way. And I ran away. But after my death debacle, I said, this is a walk in the park. So since then, given that gift of desperation, I have been in program working it fast and furiously. And my favorite line in the big book is page 77, the third line. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. I always wanted that, but I was so hamstrung by this disease. And today, my life is all about being of maximum service to God and the people about me. I go to church every day. I pray and meditate at least 2 hours a day. I do at least 40 hours of service just in OA a week. I retired directly after my death debacle, and I'm here. I'm glad to be here with all of you. Sorry I got so bogged down in the drama. I didn't get to share with you more of what I'm up to these days, but I'm going to put my contact info in the chat, and thank you. Thank you for having me today.